News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
Well, now it's time for our Friday Forum. A busy political week. At home, of course, we have the so-called giveaway budget 2025, and everyone's speculating on when we might be going to the polls. Abroad, tensions have risen considerably in the Middle East following the strikes between Israel, Hezbollah and Iran, all in the mix. Joining me now to talk about all of this, John Lee, Executive Editor of the Irish Daily Mail Group in Ireland, Emer Higgins, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Midwest, Minister of State for Business, Employment and Retail, and Richard Boyd Barrett, People Before Profit TD for Dunleary. Good welcome. Welcome to you all and good morning.
Good morning.
Now, John, we'll get a dispassionate non-political voice first. Your verdict on the budget 2025.
They're a fast food nowadays, the budget. I always find it amusing that the very cabinet ministers who spent 6 weeks leaking the budget then complain about the lack of coverage it gets in the few days afterwards. It seems to wear off, but it's a very strategic, well thought out leaking process that the media somewhat fall for. That they're
not going to turn away from.
No. To think that these are great scoops that people get against the wishes of the government, it would be incorrect. The government value this. They get 6 weeks publicity out of it. They've done that. They might get another hit again when the once-off payments begin properly again in December. So I think politically, when we've seen very bad budgets in the past, the initial ones of the crash, there was some major mistakes made when it came to taking medical cards off the elderly, etc., etc. These seem to be very well politically proofed budgets. What effect it has on a general election boost, I'm somewhat sceptical of. Mm. I think...
But eaten bread soon forgotten? It's been leaked, announced, and it's worn out basically. Even though the good news in people's pockets follows,
yeah, it'll do you good for a few percent. But ultimately, I think the general election will once again come down to housing and health, and I think specifically whether the electorate trust the government to spend well the 14 billion Apple money and the 3 billion from AIB in infrastructural advancements in housing and in health.
Richard.
Yeah, look, I mean, the government have splurged on one-off payments. Nobody is going to be sorry to receive those in the next few months.
And also they don't recur unless a future government decides to recur them.
Indeed. And I think most people are aware of that. So if it is an effort to buy the election, I don't think most people will be fooled, and they will look at the extent to which they think the real problems are being resolved. And the biggest problem by a million miles, and the one that is affecting a huge, huge numbers of people, is the housing issue. And it's affecting people at every level. Those in homeless accommodation, those on housing lists, those who can't afford, you know, where there's no affordable housing. That is going to be the issue of the election. And definitely second is the crisis in the health service, which is becoming particularly manifest, and I've been trying to highlight it this week, is that despite government promises that there's no recruitment embargo, in fact, we've discovered there is, and that's why the health unions were out protesting this week. And I think...
But is it not so much that the government is not doing what it can? It's spending oodles of money. But we don't seem to get the results that such spending would seem to merit.
Well, it is absolutely extraordinary, and I think it's an extraordinary failure that they have record budget surpluses, they have all this money available to them, and yet the housing crisis just gets worse. It's an extraordinary feat of incompetence, in my opinion, but I think it is linked to the fact that they still are relying on the private sector to solve a housing crisis where massive state intervention is needed, because we're having market failure in delivering affordable and public housing. And I think actually similarly in the health service, I mean, one of the things that came out from the briefings of the health unions this week is that the lack of staffing in the public health service has the effect of then pushing people towards private health. So that issue of a two-tier society, of over-dependence on the market, I think is at the root of the government's failure to solve both the housing and health crisis.
Emer, the question of throwing money at a problem and maybe not being able to resolve it with cash alone, because in the housing sector, there's obviously a manpower shortage. So can you build all the houses that you'd want to build because you have the money? And secondly, in the health service, so much money thrown at that problem, and still we have terrible things happening in A&E.
You're right, it's not all about money. From a housing perspective, we need to make sure we have the staff. That means investing in apprenticeships, which we're doing.
That's a very slow thing. I mean, the crisis is now.
You're
right. It's going to take three, four, 5 years for those 2024 apprentices to emerge.
And we're already into the programme is the good news. We know there was more homes built last year than there has been in decades. This year, 38,000 homes are under construction in the first 8 months of the year. That's about 224 homes being built, being started every single working day. We know that 500 first-time buyers are drawing down mortgages every week. We see it. Like, we see in my constituency in Clondalkin and Lucan, I see it. I see cranes in the skylines again. I see hoarding up. I see boots on the ground. People, as they travel the country, can see that. They can see that homes are being built.
Yeah, but the shortage is having a terrible impact on prices. I mean, in Dublin City area, you might pay almost €1 million for a modest house that you'd buy in the suburbs in yesteryear for a couple of hundred grand.
And that's why it's so important that we increase supply. Because at the end of the day, the more homes that are built, right now, demand far outweighs supply.
The idea of depending on apprentices, though, to get this done. I mean,
I don't think that's a fair comment. I said we need to invest in migrant
workers are going to have to come in. Where are you going to get them?
Well, that is happening. I'm Minister with responsibility for work permits. And we do see an awful lot of migrant workers coming in to support our construction workers here in Ireland. We see the reforms of the Planning and Development Bill happening in the Oireachtas. We see reforms
happening. Where are the migrant workers
who
are coming in? Where are they living?
Where are they living? They're living sometimes in accommodation being provided by their employer, and they're living in other cases in rental accommodation. And that is the reality, that if we need to bring people in to help with this, we're going to need them to have accommodation too. So that's why it's so important. We know our population is growing naturally anyway. That's why it's so important that we continue to build.
So what are we going to do? Are we going to build expensive modular housing for them?
What we're going to do is continue with the Housing for All plan that the minister and the government have been backing from a financial perspective, from a policy perspective, from a legislative perspective. Like, these are tangible things that are happening. There's money going into these. These are new agencies, the Land Development Agency being set up, getting a whole chunk of new money this week to ensure that they're building on state-owned land, that we're pulling every lever available to us to resolve the housing crisis, Richard, because that's what we need to do.
Okay, number one, the starting point is the government have to acknowledge what the housing need is, and they haven't. If you look at the promised delivery of social and affordable housing, you haven't. Six months you've avoided it. Discussion on the Housing Commission. We've been asking for it and you've avoided, refused to have the discussion.
Our housing targets will be published next week.
Okay, well, that's 6 months later after their Housing Commission report. So you have to acknowledge, then you look at what they're promising next year. It's exactly what they promised last year. There's no change in the targets, no change in the allocation.
The targets will be published next
week. Yeah, okay. So, but next year, we're going to get a delivery that is about half of what we need. Also, when you look at what's actually being delivered by the LDA, Shangana in my area, the so-called affordable housing is between 330,000 and 390,000. And by the way, if you pay all that, you still only own 70% of the house because the local authority is actually paying more. This is crazy prices,
but I mean,
right?
Can you make it cheaper? I mean, is there any way of building a house cheaper than that price?
Yeah,
the developers say no.
No, absolutely. The state has to realise we are going to have to subsidise the cost of housing for probably about 60% of the population. And they don't want to admit this, but that is the fact, right? And even when we were a very poor country, about 40 to 50% of the housing that was built in this country used to be directly built by the state. And the government doesn't want to acknowledge the need to do that. And
By the way, it was never really directly built by the state. It was always local authorities.
But it was public housing.
But they commissioned developers and builders to build
it. But it was subsidised. It was public housing, right? And at the moment, a tiny fraction of what is being built is actually being built as public subsidised housing. So we're going to have to dramatically increase the amount of public affordable housing. And lastly, I would just say we have to have a state construction company. The private builders themselves...
We have one. It's called the OPW.
No, they don't build houses.
No, but they build sheds and they build...
They
build modular housing.
Yeah, indeed. Absolutely. Now, we should get there, and we can get cheaper modular housing, very significantly cheaper. I don't know where they are getting their quotes or their delivery from, but it's absolutely crazy what's going on. But the private developers do not have the capacity. Even if they wanted to, we only have a small number of large-ish building firms. They do not have the capacity to deliver the social affordable housing. So the state is going to have to be part of delivering a construction core and apprentices
and the
to build
is
on
part
public
of
land.
This. The state is part of this well, already. We know that through the LDA.
The LDA has no workers.
Building lots of houses and increasing social affordable housing is admirable, and as often leftist or Marxist proposals are. But Richard will know, particularly in his constituency of Dunleary, that aspirational people in society don't always want to think that they will go into social housing permanently. They want an option to buy. And that is the great contradiction and the great problem the government have. They cannot provide affordable housing for young couples or for people trying to move up the property ladder. And then you come back to infrastructure. You know, often I think when we say we have a housing problem, I feel we have more of an infrastructural problem, that the building of housing in Ireland hasn't had a concurrent building of mass public transport to go with it. There is no reason, for instance, you couldn't have large numbers of people living in the Midlands and elsewhere, but you can't right now because there isn't the transport. And there's an additional problem for the government when it says it's going to build lots of houses, and Richard rightly implores them to do so. But in North County Dublin, where I live, there's now an additional, probably unforeseen problem that an awful lot of communities are very unhappy with the building that has gone on in their communities. If you look at the Northern Rail Line and you move along it, besides all the trouble they have getting the new numbers of people on that rail line, if you look along it, a lot of the housing is being built there. You do not see building of shopping centres, schools, creches, etc. And that's becoming a big problem in communities. And I spoke to a number of local authority candidates, some of them sitting councillors, who lost their seats. And they said that that is an additional, almost unforeseen problem with house building, which is proceeding now, that communities who already live there are very unhappy with the amount of housing that's gone into those areas.
Yeah, there's a concern, though, and I'm sure Richard will share this, so many apartments now available only to rent.
Yeah.
And people want to buy. But even if they could buy some of those units which don't have enough storage, aren't big enough, are not really family friendly, are the children going to be born and brought up in those little shoeboxes, two-bedroom shoeboxes with no storage?
I couldn't agree more. And there's some serious quality questions over some of the stuff that's being built. Not all of it, by the way. But I had a group of people in who were in a new social housing development in Ballybrack this morning, and I was shocked. The place is falling apart after 6 months. I couldn't believe what I heard, right? So there's very serious concerns there, yes. And a lot of the stuff that's being built is because certain developers want to maximise the number of units they can get on a site. So it's all about, you know, we'll pack in as many one and two bedrooms as we can. And yes, we do need one and two bedrooms, but we also need family housing. And if you look at most of the people who are in emergency accommodation, they're waiting for family housing for kids. And this stuff is not being built, again, because there's not a planned approach. The government's whole approach is about incentivizing the private sector. Now, I'm not saying there isn't always going to be a private sector, but the state has to intervene on a much bigger level to deliver the mix of housing that's necessary. And that includes, by the way, affordable housing. But it has to be genuinely affordable housing.
We've the new planning bill, which will become the Planning Act, and we'll have on commission plan all instead of on board plan all and all the rest of it. But if the people in on board plan all opened their eyes and looked at the brochures from developers selling flat complexes, and the green space is 5k away, it is not a buggy push away. The sea, you think it was around the corner. It's not. It's maybe 10k away. Yeah. That kind of stuff. How do they get away
but
with this?
I'll tell you something very immediate, though, just to mention this, and this should be a concern to everybody. It's Cherrywood, right? It's the biggest residential development in the country. And the housing is being built. It was built slowly, but it's now actually being built. But the developers have effectively signalled they're not going to build the town centre. And the whole thing was predicated
on
having
Hines,
a town centre.
Richard, I interviewed Hines at the very beginning, and he went out. And there were a couple of things that concerned me. One, in the apartments that they showed us, there was no corridor. There was a bedroom, and a kitchen living room in between. And in order to get out of the bedroom, if there were to be a kitchen fire, you'd have to make your way through that fire to get out of the apartment. But they had fire safety, you know, the sprinklers everywhere and all of that. But they, at that time, during when we did the interview, they promised that the parks would be fully developed before anyone went into any of the houses. And that is not so.
Well, the parks, in fairness, are there, but they were paid for with public money through the LEHAF funding, right?
Yeah, but
what isn't there is the town centre, the amenities, that will be, and part of the whole point of Cherry Wood is you wouldn't have to travel to go to the shops, to go to the cinema, to do all that sort of stuff. And now the private developers appears to be saying, well, it's not actually profitable for us to build the town centre, so we're not going
to
do it.
That's exactly why we need to reform planning and development bills. That's why we need to make sure that we're giving councils teeth when it comes to planning enforcement. In Adamstown, in my own area, we unfortunately were behind in getting the amenities and getting the resources, but we're glad we do have now the shops there. We do have the train station there. We do have the community centre there. We have the schools there. All those amenities have come. And what I really fully believe is that we need to be making sure that the infrastructure is happening in tandem with the development of housing. So I'm really pleased to hear the Taoiseach talk about this idea, if he were to be re-elected Taoiseach after the election, of the Department of Infrastructure. Because I think, and I think for us,
beginning
not just
to sound
as
a bit
society,
like a state construction company, maybe the government is listening to us.
Not just as a society, but also as an economy, it's something we need. We need to make sure that we're protecting Ireland's competitiveness too. And yet this week's budget has really been about that as well, because we took the sale of the bank shares and invested that into infrastructure to make sure that we are delivering all of those projects that are so needed up and down the country. And
it'll
make a real difference to communities.
As we're talking about trying to build communities and construction and all that, we are watching the destruction of Beirut at the moment at the hands of the IDF. We're looking at Iran pegging rockets over, ballistic missiles over at Israel. And you're wondering, how can, there's nobody, the UN, nobody can shout stop. The Americans won't shout stop. The Russians won't shout stop. The Chinese won't shout stop. So what's going to happen, John?
Well, it's war. And I'm probably in a minority. I think Israel has been compelled to do what it has done in the last year by an unprecedented attack on a sovereign democratic country. I don't believe that the superpowers that still exist want to intervene. I don't think the United States wants to intervene for political reasons. And I think everyone is taking a stance on things politically. But when people say de-escalate, and they accuse, for instance, wrongly, Israel of genocide and other things, Israel is defending itself.
I know, John. I mean, what they did in Gaza going in, that was completely disproportionate, wasn't it?
But I'm not quite sure what the option is for Israel at this stage. When people say de-escalate, what exactly does that mean? You know, they say it's a two-state solution. What exactly does that mean? Because their opponents don't want to.
If you take this on a completely human level, and the Israelis decide we want to get this particular leader of Hamas, so we don't care if there's a child who's carried out dead out of that building. And on the other hand, I say a life is a life is a life. That child only has one life, and the leader of Hamas only has one life. But they decide to take two.
Listen, I'm giving an opinion here. I would think, firstly, war in any instance should be avoided, and it is tragic, the death of anybody in any situation. But I don't think the impunity that
a political leader can decide
when you say
to take the life of a child in order to get one of their mortal enemies.
But Pat, how morally
acceptable is that?
But this, in completely pragmatic, my knowledge of military history. What incursion on a built-up area has ever seen a situation where civilians aren't killed? It has never happened in the history of warfare.
Can I maybe just put a perspective on that? I think the Israeli Defence Forces are absolutely renowned for their military precision, for being able to go in, for being able to take out a target, and for having all of the resources and the state-of-the-art technology available to them. And if they wanted to do that, they could. And instead, they are going in and they are saying, they're literally taking the lives of so many innocent civilians and saying, listen, that's war, that's the fallout, that's the side effect, that's what happens. And they have, in my opinion, they really have the resources at their disposal to be able to go in and take out a target if they so wish, without the kind of unbelievable destruction they are causing.
By the way,
hospitals, in schools, to children, to women, to complete
innocent
civilians.
All I'm saying, that is a myth. It is tragic warfare in any situation, be it World War II, Vietnam, and in the Middle East right now, it is impossible.
Not in today's day.
So I just don't see the option.
Okay, first of all, tens of thousands of people will be on the street in Dublin tomorrow, and their voices are rarely heard in the media discussion, demanding sanctions against Israel for genocide, for what it's doing in Lebanon, for what it's doing in Gaza. And their voice needs to be heard, because they are saying the sanctions need to be imposed just as were imposed on apartheid South Africa, because the regime was built on racism and colonialism. And that their view, and I agree with them, is that that's what the Zionist project, the Israeli Strait project, is about too. It is about the theft of Palestinian land. It is about apartheid. It is about illegal occupation. It is about denying millions of Palestinians the right to return, which they have under international law, and its use decade after decade after decade of extreme violence to put down legitimate resistance by the Palestinians trying to assert their rights. And could it be stopped? It could be stopped tomorrow if the United States, Britain and Germany stopped giving them the weapons to commit these crimes.
Richard, obviously they're very hard done by historically the Palestinians.
That's not the Palestinians' fault. What happened to Jewish people? Well, Jewish people suffered horrendously at the hands of the Nazis. But the Palestinians are not to blame for that.
The point I'm saying is that, they have the right to do whatever they feel is appropriate. But October the 7th doesn't seem right on any level. Do you know what I mean? What they did...
The violent reaction of an oppressed people, just as we know from Ireland or anywhere else, is inevitable, whether you like it or not. If you oppress people for decades, if you have apartheid and discrimination, if you have the siege of Gaza, if you have illegal annexation of Palestinian territory, if you have millions of people who've been thrown out of their homes without the right to return, they're going to resist. Right. And you have to get to the just like the Native American people resisted, just like Black South Africans resisted, just like the people of Vietnam resisted, just like the people of Algeria resisted. They're going to resist illegal, brutal colonization and occupation. Unless we recognize that fact, there is going to be no solution. And this thing is going to escalate to a terrifying level.
But do you believe that they're so maybe stupid that they didn't realise the consequences? We know what Israel does when they are provoked. And this was a massive provocation on October the 7th. And the consequences that were brought down on the heads of the ordinary Palestinian people in Gaza
The problem is for the Palestinians, they've tried everything. They tried the Great Return March in 2018, a peaceful demonstration to the fences, right, of the besieged Gaza, shot down, right? When I was there in 1987, there was no Hamas. The First Intifada was a popular uprising of young people just protesting, shot down brutally. They signed a peace deal, the so-called Oslo Peace Accords, and immediately after that accord, Israel began hundreds of thousands of illegal settlements in land that had been designated under that deal.
That's not quite what
that
happened.
That is 700,000
Palestinians
illegal
Oslo.
Settlements I just were think, input on I land think, designated for
you know,
Palestinians.
Richard, if you meet Richard around at Leinster House, he's a polite, friendly, cordial man. And I just this use of genocide, the definition of genocide is very specific.
Yeah.
A genocide is an intentional effort to obliterate a people.
In part
like,
or in whole.
For instance, what happened,
or to displace
what happened in Germany in between 1941 and 1945. It is not what is happening now. Colonisation.
The ICJ think it's happening.
This use of language is just not helpful. It's just, that is not what is happening.
Why do the International Court of Justice think there's a plausible genocide and think there's a plausible case?
What I would ask, Richard, in the wake of October the 7th, in the wake of Hamas and their rule of Gaza and Hezbollah and their support by Iran, what option Israel has been presented in the last year or in the last 10 years? Now, but no one denies, including the last five leaders of the Shin Bet, for instance, who have spoken about this, that Israel is, by occupying territories that they took in war over a long period of time, is merely creating this problem for themselves. And that is accepted by the Israelis themselves, because you cannot keep, as Richard said, people in because you don't hear it very often.
Oh, no, because in international law, John, you just...
No one stands up to your use of language like genocide and colonization.
The International
Court of Justice is
saying, and not me, the South African government brought the case.
They have given guidance.
They've said it is a plausible genocide.
They haven't. They have given guidance. And it is open for investigation.
That's just nonsense, right?
They made a ruling.
Under international law, millions of Palestinians are being denied the right to return, and there is a legal occupation going on of Palestinian territory. Emer, that's a fact.
I'm conscious, I suppose, we're in October the 4th now, and it's very close to a year since that attack happened. I certainly believe that attack shouldn't have happened, and I absolutely condemn the attack that happened on October 7th. But I really do believe that what the Israeli force fences and what the Israeli government have been doing since then is completely disproportionate and needs to stop. And that's why Ireland has been at the fore of this in terms of calling for a ceasefire, in terms of using our diplomatic channels to get the message out there that Ireland wants a ceasefire. Ireland wants peace in the Middle East. And the only way that can happen is, first, if we have a ceasefire. Secondly, if hostages on all sides, I believe, are freed. And thirdly, if new peace agreements are signed. And that has to be where we get to. And we need the international community to help make that happen.
But it's not, Israel is not going to stop while they have the weapons to kill. They just won't. The weapons have to stop going to Israel or they will keep killing. I mean, look what's happening in Beirut today. Does anybody seriously believe, because people say we'd like a ceasefire, that they're going to respond? It's nonsense. They're going to keep killing people. They're doing it now, and they've been doing it for the last year.
What happens after the ceasefire?
What happens is, so if you stop killing tomorrow, people are dead.
And what does Iran
do then? That's a good start.
What does Iran do then, Richard?
Iran are only doing...
Ceasefire tomorrow.
Iran, listen...
Do they stop firing rockets at Israel?
I have no time
Israel?
For the Iranian regime, but Iran are doing what they're doing because of what's happening in Gaza, in the West Bank and in Lebanon, right? That's how this thing has escalated.
But is it not part of the larger project of Iran to destroy the state of Israel?
Iran politically doesn't agree with the Zionist project, right? But it has shown... It hasn't invaded anybody. It isn't occupying anybody.
No, but Hezbollah has.
Hezbollah were a force that were developed in response to an Israeli occupation of southern Lebanon that went on for 18 years.
They have numerous proxies, as we know. Anyway, we have to leave it there. My thanks to Richard Boyd Barrett, People Before Profit TD for Dunleary, Emer Higgins, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Midwest, Minister of State for Business, Employment and Retail, and John Lee, Executive Editor of the Daily Mail Group in Ireland. Thank you, one and all.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.